Hey, this is Josh Keaton, and you are listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
The galaxy. To your eyes, 100 billion points of light. But where you see light, I see worlds. And the countless stories that fill them. What you call destiny is just an equation. The product of variables. Right place, right time. Or in some instances, the wrong place. At the wrong time. What if one choice changed everything? What if every reality came down to one single moment? Join me, explore the multiverse, and ask the question, what if?
Hello and welcome to Tooncast. This is episode 244. That's right, folks, 244 episodes. Holy crap. I am, of course, Steve, Joe, and Mike. Joining me for what is probably going to be the last Superhero Saturday for a while. I said this last time, but it is Allison Sky Richards. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
The thread is very, very thin.
I need to just stop asking you this question.
Well, things have happened since the last time we recorded this podcast, and it's not that I don't want to reveal. I've always been honest with the listeners. It's not that I haven't been, but Karen and I haven't really talked yet, so we're not really making what's going on public, but it's bad, but it's not. Sometimes I wish I lived in a what if universe that, you know, this, like, oh, Jesus, I'm going to turn myself into Dr. Stephen Strange. Great. The evil version of him.
I was going to say, please don't be Stephen Strange from this show.
Oh, Lord. Okay, so we are here to talk about the Marvel Studios Assembled. This is the most recent episode. I believe it is episode 5 on Disney Plus. It is all about behind the scenes of What If. And as you folks heard in the very beginning of this podcast, that is most likely going to be the narration I use going forward. Like at the very end, when at the beginning of the show, when Jeffrey says, at the end of it, he says, ask the question, what? It's just this clear, because it shows him in the booth recording the line. So there's no music, there's no this, there's no that. And it was very cool watching this.
Yeah. The one thing that I liked for this... Sorry, my brain actually just died. I need to put more caffeine in.
Okay. Well, we can take a break. We'll be back right after this, folks.
We were looking at how to grow, how to expand, how to evolve post-Endgame and into Phase 4. And we had tons of ideas for features and for follow-ups to existing characters and introducing new characters. But it was Disney Plus and the idea of Disney Plus that really allowed us to roll up our sleeves and do things we hadn't done before. We had to think, what ideas are worth doing in animation that we couldn't do anywhere else? And it was Brad Winterbaum who came into my office and said, what about doing a what if? We have so many fans now. We have so many people that have watched our movies multiple times. Everybody knows how things happened, how Iron Man became Iron Man, how Cap became Cap, that the What If series from comics was always such a great way of putting a spin on it.
This was really interesting to see. This was between all the producer notes and all the discussions that they had and seeing Jeffrey do the lines and them talking about how they adapted the What If concept for the Marvel Universe or the Marvel Cinematic Universe, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, and I really liked how they kind of went into their thought process mm-hmm. for the choices they made, both story-wise and artistic. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that But it should have realized it that Norman Rockwell was a big inspiration to the art side. And when I sit back and I look now, especially like at Captain Carter, you're just like, yeah, yeah, that really has a lot of Norman Rockwell. And then, of course, they're showing these character sketches, and then it has the typical Norman Rockwell, you know, orangish bubble that the top part of the characters are, you know, displayed in for their character sketch.
Right.
And it's like I kept looking at the style as we were watching it and being like, this feels familiar, this feels familiar. And it wasn't until watching this episode of Assembled that I'm like, oh, that's where it comes from.
Yeah, exactly. And they talk about it being 2D, 3D, half D, whatever you want to call it. 3D cartoons are a little weird to me. They've always, it doesn't matter how good they improve, but the third dimension aspect of animation has always been weird to me. I always really more so enjoy the cell shaded 2D animation, and that's what I felt like this was. And I love seeing them and hearing them talk about the process, as you said, about the inspiration for it and how it comes together as an overall design.
Yeah, and even then they're still experimenting on things with you know, experimenting with light and lenses and, you know, angles. I had to actually look up what an anamorphic lens was to find out what they're actually talking about. And it's basically it's what turns normal video into a widescreen. So, you know, and it makes it the video smoother. And I'm like, you know, I see how that is, you know, how that's used so much today with all of these smartphones and movies, that you're used to seeing those dimensions, the computer screens, even the 11:9 computer screen. So having the animation being, you know, created in that style, you know, makes complete sense.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful piece of animation to look at. It really is. The whole show, all 9 episodes, even the zombie episode. And I'm not saying that because I dislike Marvel zombies. I'm saying it that way because I'm not a zombie person. I just don't. That's just not my thing, and that's okay. However, that Marvel zombies episode is probably the best animated representation we are ever going to get of that concept.
And from listening to them about how they used What If to kind of like to bring it in, it kind of sounds like they're, and then some of the other things they said, it's kind of like they're testing the ground for animating and making a Marvel Zombies world. And I bet you if the reaction was what they hoped for, I wouldn't be surprised if we either see more of the zombie world in season 2, or if they actually like make their own spinoff of it, where they start at the very beginning to how the zombie apocalypse happened and wind it all the way to the point where we came in with What If.
Yeah, absolutely. And I said this in the last episode of the show. I don't know what, you know, I know there was supposed to be the Gamora episode, and that's fine. If they could have fit that in, they would have, but, you know, COVID does what COVID does, I guess. But it is what it is.
Moved it to season 2. So we're going to see it.
Yeah, we're still going to see it. But what I'm saying is, having seen the 9 episodes and how they put those together, I don't know where that would have fit in. I don't, like, you get to episode 1, 2, 3, and 4, and then episode 5 is the zombies. Episode 6 is, oh God, what is episode 6? Episode 6
Brotor,
is,
I think.
No, episode 6 is Killmonger.
Okay, 7 is
Thor. And 7 is Thor, and then 8 is Ultron, and 9 is where the Watcher broke his oath.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, looking at this, the only place maybe you could have put it is between Carter and T'Challa, between episodes 1 and 2. I don't know where it was supposed to be originally, and it doesn't matter at this point, but my point is, with it being pushed to season 2 and how they tied, like, what if has always been, oh, this tale, that tale, but they're using the Marvel Cinematic Universe instead of the Marvel comics. They aren't going to, like, I saw, and I don't want to, I try not to dwell on these things, but I have to bring them up sometimes. I saw a very clickbaity article from comicbookresources.com. 10 stories that the Marvel What If animated series should adapt from the comics. Yeah. Did they not, whoever wrote that article, did they not understand that this is from the MCU? This is not pulling from the comics. Hey, maybe they could, but there's so many threads in the MCU that you can create stories with. I mean, you know, 13, 14, 15, however the hell long it's been for all those movies. Like, you don't necessarily need to go to the comics.
Yeah, but the thing is that they are still pulling from the comics. Marvel Zombies only exists in comics.
That's true.
And they brought that into the MCU. What is the other thing that they brought in from the comics? There's one other one that they brought in from the comics for that. Oh, gosh.
I mean, there are story ideas that are brought in, but this article was basically like, adapt this specific story. Like, adapt the story where, from the comics, where Barbara Ketch, instead of Danny Ketch, becomes Ghost Rider.
When they were talking about that, they were talking about their introduction to
right.
the universe in that article. In that part, not Comic Book Resource, but like the Assembled.
In Assembled. But that's what I'm saying. The article on the web on the other website was like, "Oh, they should make an animated series episode out of this." And I'm just whatever. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, and I mean, we are going to see another What If story actually appear in the MCU in the movies because the idea of Jane Foster becoming Thor, which is going to be part of Love and Thunder, that's actually originally a What If story.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Huh.
That's originally a What If story.
I did not know that.
Another thing that began in What If is Professor Hulk, Smart Hulk.
Yep.
That's a What If story originally. Zombies was Marvel Zombies. So stuff from the comics has made its transition into the MCU. I mean, Clint Barton's background is actually all Ultimates.
True.
For his MCU background. What is the other? There's a couple other things that came directly from the comics into the MCU without any changes.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised. What they would do is they would look at some of the comic book ideas and say, okay, where were these people in the MCU? How can we do this as an MCU side? I don't know if Ghost Rider is actually canon for the MCU, but if it does become canon, then I don't see why we couldn't have a Barbara episode. But until we have an MCU version of him, that's accepted in MCU, we won't.
Yeah, it's just, it's crazy what they can and can't use. It's crazy with all these rights and whatever. And
yeah.
Have you seen the Morbius trailer that recently dropped?
No, I have been avoiding that one right now.
Okay, well, it's probably not something you want to watch. I watched it. I'll say this. Leto does a better Morbius than he does Joker. But it... I don't know. It just... It's very horrifying. I guess. But this Marvel What If behind the scenes, I loved listening to all of this. The only thing I wish this special had is I wish it had talked to Laura Cartman, the composer for the music. That's the only thing that I think is missing from this behind the scenes thing. And I know it's a 40-minute thing and they can only fit so much in, but I mean, the music is so much. To me, anyway, the music is always in anything, whether it's animation, whether it's movies. If there's a specific scored piece of media, like, I don't necessarily count, like, sitcoms, because sitcoms half the thing is a laugh track most of the time. But anyway, yeah, that was the only thing I felt was missing. But, I mean, this, it was just nice to hear how invested, like when I think it was, yeah, it was Brad Winterbaum who said something about bringing in Brian. I think it's Brian Andrews. I could be wrong.
We had been working with Brian Andrews for many years at Marvel Studios. He had boarded some of our most iconic action sequences. I had worked with him on Ant-Man 1 when he designed Scott Lang's first descent into the quantum realm at the end of that movie. And he had taken a big hand most recently as part of the story room that cracked the finale of Endgame, which was a combination of storyboard artists and Chris and Steve, the writers. And frankly, when I pitched What If to Kevin and things were happening so fast, I just called Brian, who I knew, and said, hey, dude, do you want to work on this together? And his response was, well, yeah, man, of course.
Like, I love their enthusiasm. I love that they have all been kind of in the Marvel Cinematic Universe behind the scenes stuff. Like they said in the special, Brian's almost been there since the beginning, since Iron Man. And you can really tell the dedication, the pride, the love that they are putting into this. And it's just so much fun.
Yeah, and the thing that really got to me from that, which is probably the reason why I love this series a lot, is when they brought up talking about when they brought in A.C. Bradley as an EP and how her focus is on maintaining the core of who these characters are, even if they're in different multiverses. And that's like, for me, that's a very big thing. I mean, first of all, everybody who has ever listened to me talk knows that I go to stories for character. I examine character when I'm watching things. And for me, that's like my big thing when I look at fan fiction. I don't care what the AU is, you know, that they're putting the characters in. I want to still be able to recognize that character for the core elements in them. And if people can do that and keep that essence of that character, that is the one of the signs of a great writer, is being able to keep hold of who those characters are.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And that's what, knowing that they brought in her specifically to keep that, that just sells me more on the whole development team and what their priorities were for this series.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely a great, great team that they put together. It's... Mm-hmm. from seeing the drawings to seeing the completed animation to seeing the cells and just hearing their excitement for the ideas that they unfolded. And I like, and I've said this before, I like that it is, it seems to me anyway, one multiverse. Yes, you have various, you know, you have Thor from here, you have a dark Thor who seems to be a douchebag, you have, you know, Killmonger, you got Captain Carter, you have all these people who are different from the regular MCU that we know, from all these different worlds, but with the one exception of, with the Watcher, tying them all together into one universe, one multiverse, making them the guardians of the multiverse. That's just, like, I didn't want these to just be one-off stories. By episode 6, I was like, oh, these all have to tie in somehow. Mm-hmm. And then we got 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
And like I said in our reviews of episode 8 and episode 9, that's essentially a two-parter between what if Ultron won and what if the Watcher broke his oath? Because that was one hell of a finale.
Yeah. And we know we're going to come back to Captain Carter because of that tag at the end of the final episode. And in the, in this episode of Assembled, you know, they also talk about how season 2 is going to be a big thing of relationship between Captain Carter and the Watcher. Yeah. So I don't see that there were, I don't see us not visiting any of these worlds again, because there are actually still plots to all of them. I mean, we have, in even in Marvel Zombie thing, we still have T'Challa and Spidey and the head of Scott, you know, trying to find a cure, you know, and then what's that cure going to do? You know, so you still have that. You still have, you know, Doctor, you know, Strange watching over this battle between Ultron and Killmonger, you know? So there are still more stories to tell. I mean, there's so much more to go with the Ravagers that they can do. It's going to be sad that they will have to recast for the voice, but, you know,
if they recast at all, I don't know if they will.
Here's the thing. I would want them to recast because, as you know, in the visual movie, you know, they're not going to recast, you know, him there. Yeah. But in the animation, you can continue T'Challa's story. And you can get a voice that can get really close to Chadwick. Mm-hmm. And people can still allow themselves to continue to see stories from him.
That's true. And I'm just trying to go through my mental Rolodex of all the voice actors that I know who could potentially pull that off.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, I wouldn't wish for anyone, you know, everyone to stop voicing an animated Batman if Kevin Conroy passed. When Kevin Conroy finally passes in 20,000 years. You know.
Yes, that is true. However, there... I think it's a different precedence because Batman has always had multiple. Yes, Kevin Conroy, number one definitive in my mind. But all the different Batman series all have different actors doing it, and that's fine. But with I don't know if it's because he passed. Or it's because of what he brought to the role of the character. Now, I have not read any of the T'Challa stuff in the comics. I have a whole page and a half of Black Panther comics. Because when when it either hit Disney Plus or right after he died, Comixology put, like, literally almost every single issue of Black Panther, any of the Black Panther series, for free.
Yeah.
And I just grabbed them all, but I've never actually read those yet. Yeah. So for me, it solely is Chadwick. And like you said, yes, there could be somebody out there that could do a very, very close impersonation, impression. I don't want to say impersonation. I'll say impression. I mean, I know technically they're kind of the same thing, but I don't know. It's just going to be weird.
In the end, I also don't think Chadwick would have wanted his T'Challa's stories to have stopped in the MCU just because, you know, he passed. I feel that because he knows how much it means to young black boys to have a hero that looks like them, that they would want to have that continued. And I would want to have that continued for them.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, what else do we need to say about the behind the scenes thing? Anything else you want to bring up?
I kind of love that guy's desk who had all the toys on it.
Yeah.
But then again, it's not like I'm not sitting currently in a room that, you know, is half covered in the four Robins all behind me. So, and then Clint over to my side.
Gotta keep him by the hip, right?
Oh, yeah. Inspiration.
That's right. Oh, man.
So, yes. No, I just really like these shows for how they show the behind the scenes. I love listening to Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah.
And him just even talking about his... how he developed his voice.
One of the things we're exploring in Phase 4, which we've talked about, is the multiverse. And what if, as almost every episode is narrated by the character The Watcher, a very important character in the comics that we've never really seen much of in the MCU. Briefly, we saw some Watchers as a little cameo with Stan Lee in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
Anyway, before I was so rudely interrupted.
We know the way it worked in the movies we watched. He's showing us other ways it could have gone.
In a multiverse of infinite possibility, is your destiny determined by your nature or by the nature of your world?
We knew that we were going to do The Watcher. The Watcher is a big part of What If. We needed this guide to help us navigate these vast new realities. And the voice we all heard in our head was Jeffrey Wright from day one.
I am The Watcher. Where humans see chaos, I see the crucible that would transform this collection of individuals into a team of heroes.
The Watcher kind of serves as a Rod Serling to the Twilight Zone, kind of narrating the events, but also a sometimes passive, sometimes not participant.
Oh, you're so close. The answer is right there.
The Watcher is... a celestial, extraterrestrial being.
You know.
It always surprises me that his actual voice is not the deep voice that he uses for certain characters.
Yeah.
It always surprises me that he's a little higher pitched in real life with his normal voice, but when he uses that instrument, you just stand at attention and listen to the man, no matter what he's talking about.
Yeah.
I think he was introduced, if I'm not mistaken, in a Fantastic Four comic in 1963, where we discover him on the moon. And he's introduced on the cover as the most dramatic being.
Humanity. So eager, so willing to face the impossible, yet blind to the bigger picture.
The language is very cool, and it kind of, you know, it speaks to a certain tone. He's obviously got to have a kind of strength and a kind of, you know, gravitas and power and all that stuff.
Time, space, reality. It's more than a linear path. It's a prism of endless possibilities.
I like the idea of doing animation, of using the voice really as, you know, from my perspective, as, you know, the whole character. I'd really just pretty much do what I do with any script, though, and anything, is just try to find the music that's on the page and figure out if I can play it, you know?
I am the Watcher. I am your guide through these vast new realities. Follow me and ponder the question, what if?
I just love how the whole team really came together.
Yeah.
I also loved how when they were coming up with like an idea of a dark Thor, how they didn't go, you know, like how they didn't go the automatic like evil route, like, you know, didn't make him out to be like what Loki is in our current TV, in our current MCU. But they made him a frat boy douchebag. And I'm just like, from looking at where the very beginning of Thor, where he was before he lost his hammer, that was his personality.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and like we said in the Thor episode, like, my mother is coming and she's very mad. And
they're like, oh, Freya.
Yeah. And he's like, I need your help, you know. And it again, do I like douchebag party Thor, like, at the beginning, when I was first introduced to the character, when I watched the first movie, I was like, if he wasn't with the Avengers, I could do without him.
Mm-hmm.
Plain and simple, have no real interest to explore Thor, you know, Odin's son. Now, eventually, hopefully, Jane Foster as Thor, that's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I always roll every time as I said in other of our episodes, once we hit Ragnarok, I was like, okay, I like Thor now. 'Cause he's finally not just the party dude. He's kicking ass and taking names.
Yeah.
Not that he didn't before, but he was more like 90-10, 90 on the party and 10 on the kicking ass. And by Ragnarok, he's like, I lost an eye and I have to get it back and I'm going to kill everybody to do so, or whatever he said. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, and then, man, just having Doctor Strange watch over Killmonger and Ultron, that's some Phantom Zone level shit right there.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting.
And I mean, you know, I just have to think back about all my appearances of my boy, because Clint, you know, is my boy. That's one thing I want to see is follow where the widow at the end of the world, goes into the world without a widow. Yep. I want to see that reunion. And I also want to see a what if of how Endgame would have turned out if it had been Hawkeye who jumped and died, you know, and Natasha had stayed.
Yeah.
Because I want to think that it would have been a little different. Mm-hmm. Because not only would you have to tie that into Endgame, but then Kate Bishop would still be there because of the fact Kate Bishop is going to be taking up the Ronin mantle instead of a Hawkeye mantle at the beginning.
Yeah.
And so you know, Nat would get involved to find out who the heck is pretending to be her best friend. And so the Hawkeye series would end up being then, you know, Nat and Kate would become become basically Nat's mentee instead of Clint's. And that's a different type of training right there.
Oh yeah. Very much so.
Also takes it from a comedy to a drama.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited. I think they also said in the special something about potentially having a season per year. That would be cool. I don't know if that's feasible on the animation side because animation does take a while, but that would be really cool if we got season 2 in 2022.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other thing. The What If comics while they started in like 77 and they still come out, but there are like years of gaps between when they come out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just picked up one of the trades because it actually had a what if Clint had killed Norman Osborn during the Dark Reign comic storyline. And I want to look at that one. And, you know, that's like one of the last ones that have come out. And that was back in like still in the 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it was issue 198. So they've only had 200 issues come out since the 77.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what season 2 does. I do have all of the What If trades in my wish list on Comixology, but as we've mentioned before over on the Pullbag, Comixology is going to be completely folded into Amazon, and I don't like that. But it is what it is. I can't stop it.
You can always just get a subscription to, you know, Marvel Unlimited, and then you can just read them up there.
I know, but the whole point and whole reason why I loved Comixology was it had everything from everywhere. Yes, I had to buy the actual comics, whether it was the single issues or the trades, but I didn't mind because I love their guided view and I didn't have to subscribe to 7 different things.
Well, I will tell you from having had Marvels for both the Marvel and the DC versions, they also have the guided views.
I know. I've got a buddy of mine that lets me use his DC thing, so.
Yeah. So, and that's actually how I learned it, and I was hoping Comixology would have it when I finally had to break down and get some stuff off of there.
Oh, yeah. They were the first, you know, 8 years ago, they were the first ones that I ever knew that had the guided view, and I can't read comics any other way now.
Yeah.
And yes, I know Marvel and DC have it, but it's not. There have only been 4 times in 8 years that I've been using the Comixology guided view that I've had a problem with how the guided view is mapped out. And a couple of the DC ones were poorly mapped out, but it is what it is. It's for another podcast. Marvel Studios, What If Assembled. Go watch the behind the scenes, folks. Go watch season 1. All 9 episodes are on Disney Plus. This was fun. This was a fun journey.
Yes, it was. And I can't wait for season 2 so we can come back and have an episode where we rewatch all of season 1 again, prep. And and then, you know, have our second episodes. Also, I love, by the way, the guys who do Honest Trailers.
John Bailey, yep.
Yep, and they just made a Marvel's What If Honest Trailer.
And but why?
I was sitting there, like, cracking up the whole time.
I'm sure the Screen Junkies / Honest Trailers guys would, you know, not care, but I have already recorded that audio. As soon as I saw it, I'm like, Audacity, record.
From the studio, you know the one. There's only like 2 of them left now anyways. Comes a series based on silly comic books, like What If Iron Man Fought King Arthur? Or What If Wolverine Was a Vampire? That dares to imagine something even more ridiculous. What if MCU writers could try something new? But not like new, just a slight remix of some old favorites. Let's not go too crazy here. Marvel's What If. Enjoy some wild animated experiments that stay true to the MCU by having no real beginning or end. no real message to get behind. And every character, from the most hardened warrior to the most powerful cosmic being, speaks like an AI barfing out Chandler Bing dialogue.
I simply abhor drama.
Your outfit would suggest otherwise.
Yeah! Guys, I'm covered in Sharon.
Do you guys just not have horror movies in Wakanda?
We don't need them. We have American reality shows.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Right now, you're running at an 8, and I need you to take it down to a 4.
Your team-building instincts, Zebra.
Yeah. Tell to HR.
Okay, I don't sound like that. That is so not true.
Oof. That happened. Meet the Watcher, the other extremely powerful comics character who swore never to intervene in human affairs that we're meeting this fall. He's a messy bitch who lives for drama, and this Jeffrey Wright-shaped planetarium will guide you through alternate timelines, like, what if England had a pop culture icon who wasn't a sociopath? What if every franchise was better without Chris Pratt? What if all the Avengers died, and also Agent Coulson was a 5 on the Kinsey scale?
He's a Caucasian male, mid-20s, with really great hair.
It's an accurate description. He's gorgeous. Hashtag Steve, I heart Steve.
Even while rotting, he smells like lavender.
What if the universe had it out for Rachel McAdams? You know, Dr. What's-Her-Face? What if she was the key to all of this? Any interest? What if zombies? You guys still like zombies, right? Sorta? Okay, how about this one? What if Killmonger, the most sympathetic villain in the entire MCU, was just destined to become evil? Like, no matter what, someone should have killed him in his crib. What do you mean this isn't working for you? Fine, we'll do it your way. What if Ultron stole Vision and chopped off Thanos' arm and ate the universe and was like, "Rawr, I'm gonna eat you too!" And the Watcher had to be like, "Not on my watch!" And they start punching, and Avengers fall down, and the robots get hit with the shields again. Okay, you good? Did you little content piggies get what you came for? Come on, why are you crying? Oh, right, this is a show for kids. I forget that sometimes. Kick back and listen to find out which of your favorite actors needed to pick up an extra check during COVID.
Don't play the fool with me, Fury.
Michael Douglas? Really? Then get genuinely choked up when you realize you're hearing Chadwick Boseman do T'Challa for the last time.
It doesn't feel over.
And finally, wonder what Dave Bautista did that caused Disney not to even reach out. All right, principals. But regardless, thrill as a bunch of million-dollar voices emerge from heroes who look like the caricatures you pay $10 for at a town fair. Because while Disney's built its entire brand on top-quality animation, everyone deserves a break now and then. It's been a tough year. Are we sure they didn't buy DreamWorks too? You know what's hot right now? The multiverse. And after Endgame helped set up the idea of the multiverse, and WandaVision teased the possibilities of the multiverse, and Loki explained the scope of the multiverse, and Doctor Strange 2 gives us multiverse madness, what if we'll drive the message of the multiverse home even further? We're all one of an infinite number of variants going through the same sh**. Our struggle seen only by a voyeuristic space walnut who could save us from our fates at any time but won't. Wow, there had to be an easier way than killing free will to explain why Terrence Howard can't play Rhodey anymore or whatever. He thinks 1 times 1 is 2. So if you want to see your favorite Marvel characters and exciting new stories that stretch the imagination, buy a comic book. But if you want more of the things you already liked, combined with other things you already liked, resulting in something slightly less than the sum of its parts, well, what if there was nothing else to watch until Eternals comes out? Wow, look at him stand there. Can't wait. Starring, I only watch the multiverse for the articles. You Captain America. The cat is the Pratt. Someone, please take this man's driver's license. Glove, Death, and Robots. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Scarlett Johansson. Gundam Wang. Futurama did it. Asgardian Pi. Precario. Hentai Squid. And
this is what happens when you mess with a mouse, Robert.
You have to die.
Hola. Oh, I'm gonna bob. I'm definitely gonna bob.
But why?
Yeah, John Bailey is epic voice guy is exactly that. He's very, very awesome, and I love him doing honest trailers. Yeah. So hilarious.
Yeah, I'm waiting to see, you know, like what the Hawkeye one is once the whole miniseries airs.
Yep. All right, folks, I think that's going to do it for us. Oh, the only other thing I wanted to bring up was when they were talking about the story aspects of What If Season 1, the fun part for them wasn't the moment that caused the what if. It was the then what. I love that. It's like, what if, and then what?
because they made the what if their inciting action, if you take that from screenwriter speak into novel speak, you know, the inciting action is basically your conflict coming to light. Like, what is the thing that's going to drive the rest of your story?
Yeah.
And then, you know, everything else afterwards is that story. So, as they pretty much said in the episode, but no, it's always the ride that's the most fun.
Yeah, you absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And literally the ride on, you know, Hydra Stomper's back was, you know, used as their example.
That's right. I wonder who's in there.
I swear, if we're going to see this coming the way that they did Winter Soldier, Steve's going to be Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And I want to see him be Winter Soldier, but still be tiny and skinny.
Skinny Steve, yeah.
Skinny Steve as Winter Soldier, but with the super strength.
That would be funny.
Because that would be amazing, and I would never have seen it coming if I didn't think about it myself.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. All right, folks, I think we are going to get the heck out of here. No ad break this time around, just a really short behind-the-scenes episode with a lot of fun. I'm probably going to put a lot of the clips, not a lot, but some of the clips of what they said in here somewhere.
Oh, it's a great story because it is exploring the relationship between Steve and Peggy, with this time Peggy being the super soldier. And it's also nice because we get to have a female hero, superhero, and what does that look like in the 1940s? How is she treated? What's the battles that she has to fight that are singular to her being a woman that Steve, we never had to deal with?
Where have you been all my life?
The Allies must be desperate, sending in a fragile Fraulein to fight for them.
Fragile?
Scheiße.
Exactly.
All right, Toonsters, as always, we want to thank you for joining us here on Tooncast. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. Send an email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays. Apple and Google Podcasts, leave us reviews, please. Spotify and any other podcatching client you choose to use. Follow us on Twitter at GCR and Tooncast is for the show. Also, Tooncast at Tooncast Beyond. I am at TF2 and Mike. You can also follow at Geekcast Radio for the network. What is your Twitter, Allison?
It is Ali Sky Richards, AliSkyRichards.
Become a fan of Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Geekcast Radio Network. You can also look up Tooncast All Tunes All the Time over there, as well as the Superman and Lois tapes. Still waiting. .. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast and wish you will join us next time when we will be giving you something new. Well, technically it's new, it's already debuted, but we are doing our second episode of Tooncast Origins with SCP-21, my buddy Steve Megatron. So we have 30 questions all about people's cartoon habits and cartoon watching. That similar to what the pull bag is, similar to what I do on Toycast, except it's all cartoon based. So Steve's episode is coming up next. For now, I am TF2 and Mike with
Ali Sky Richards.
Thank you for listening. Until next time, and oh yeah, unleash the tune in you.
As we were developing the Marvel Cinematic Universe and all the projects that went into creating this big tapestry, it was a very you know, specific house of cards in a way. In What If, we get to take a baseball bat to that entire structure and just shatter it into a million pieces and see what's left and rebuild in our own mutated, interesting, unexpected forms.
We've seen this before, a universe in the final days of destruction. But this particular story, this one breaks my heart.
I think in some ways everything's surprising about the series, and because that's what's wonderful about this concept, this what-if concept. We have these known stories, these known characters, these known arcs. Doesn't matter. Anything can be explored. And so, in some ways, surprise is the whole point.
In the story of season one, the Watcher makes it very clear to us that he is not going to get involved.
He's on the wrong path. I could warn him, intervene. But the fate of his universe is not worth risking the safety of all others.
But it just so happens that there is a story that culminates our first season that requires the Watcher's intervention. We reimagine a world where Ultron got the Vision's body as he meant to do in Age of Ultron, the film, and when Thanos inevitably comes to get the Infinity Stone from his forehead, he defeats Thanos.
Fascinating.
And gets all six Infinity Stones. Once he does that, he's able to wage war against the entire cosmos and create an entire universe devoid of all life. So devoid of life that he can actually hear the voice of our narrator.
Basking in the boundless silence of his universe, Ultron ascended to a previously unattainable level of consciousness. He became aware of another. He became aware of the... I see you.
And when he's aware of the Watcher, he can break through the universal wall and wage war on the multiverse itself, which forces the Watcher into a position he's never been in before, which is to defend the very thing that he's sworn an oath to only observe. And it just so happens the perfect cocktail of heroes that he needs to defeat this multiverse-destroying bad guy happen to be the same heroes whose stories we've been watching all season.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
It's okay.
We forgot what we were talking about.
The behind the scenes of What If.
Yeah, I know. I just wasn't sure if we had segued from your life into that yet.
Yes, we did. Okay. My life is yeah, these are going to be great outtakes, folks.
Oh, my gosh.
I am the Watcher. I am your guide through these vast new realities. Follow me and ponder the question, what if?
But it's so good.